It's time once again for the Rose Chat Podcast, your source of inspiration and motivation to achieve the rose garden of your dreams. Join award-winning gardeners Chris Van Cleve and Teresa Byington as they explore the world of roses and chat with the world's top rose experts, authors, artists, curators, and more.
Since 1999, Rose Mania has been your one-stop source for all your rose care needs. From chemicals and safety equipment to garden tools and fertilizers, Rose Mania offers the top products at some of the best prices around. They even sell bare root roses. Rose Mania carries a full line of products to help battle fungal diseases, insects, and mice, while not harming the beneficial insects you want in your garden. Shipping is free on merchandise orders over $25. Their staff of consulting rosarians is available to answer your rose questions, so visit them today at rosemania.com.
Try Haven Brand Soil Conditioners, providing generations of gardeners with a truly all-natural alternative to chemical fertilizers with their line of composted manure and alfalfa teas. Find them online at manuretea.com.
Well,
hi, I'm Phil Paul with the American Rose Society. My family has been growing roses for some 50 years. My wife and I have grown roses across the United States for the last 25. There's nothing more breathtaking than a beautiful display of roses in full bloom.
No matter if you're an experienced rosarian or are just beginning your first rose garden, the American Rose Society is here to help. It's a tremendous resource for making your rose garden the envy of your neighborhood. There's even a rose photography contest for members to showcase the best of the best. Each member will be published in the American Rose magazine.
We invite you to become a part of one of America's oldest horticultural societies and the home of our national floral emblem.
For more information on becoming a member of the American Rose Society and on the Rose Photography Contest, visit ars.org.
Well, hey, y'all. Welcome to another edition of the Rose Chat Podcast. Now, we're so glad you've joined us. On today's podcast, we're going to be chatting with Ann Chapman, who's joining us from her home in New Zealand. Now, she's the author of The Women in My Rose Garden. This book is a fascinating look at the women behind some of our most beloved roses. Now, I'm sure she'll share something a little bit, too, about her own garden, don't you think, Teresa?
Oh, I think she will, and what a garden it is. You know, Anne's with us. She's in the virtual studio all the way from New Zealand. Don't you just love technology? So let's just bring her on. Let's get started talking about the women in our rose garden and the rose garden. Hey, Anne, welcome to Rose Chat.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Oh, we're so glad to have you. And there's been quite a buzz about tonight's show on social media and in our chat room. So we're going to start out by asking you a question that we ask most of our guests, and that is, how did you become interested in growing roses?
Well, we lived in England for nearly 13 years, and we lived in Kent, which is considered to be the Garden of England. And it's an area that is absolutely full of wonderful old stately homes and gardens. And it was just going through all those gardens that I just fell in love with the voluptuousness of old-fashioned roses.
I've seen pictures of Kent, and I cannot think of a more idyllic place to live. Oh, my goodness.
It's lovely in the summer and cold in the winter.
Well, that's good. You get a break. You get a break from the summer.
Yes,
I can see why you were inspired. We read that recently you moved, but could you tell us a little bit about the garden, your previous garden? I've seen pictures, and it was just spectacular.
Well, our first major garden was Trinity Farm, which was a three-acre garden, and it was attached to a small nursery that that we developed to sell old-fashioned roses. And in it, we had a blank canvas. It was just a bare paddock when we moved there, and we finished up with about 1,800 roses in the garden, about 800 different varieties. And it was a lot of work as we went into our 60s.
Now, we garden attached to things. Was it difficult to leave your roses?
Well, no, it was and it wasn't. What I didn't miss was working out in the garden, whatever the weather, for eight hours a day. But what I did miss was that going around in the evening with a glass of wine in my hand and looking at them and inspecting them and seeing how they were doing.
Oh, that is the most fun, those garden walks. That is the
yes.
most fun. Did you take any of the roses from that garden with you when you left?
Yes, we did. We took about 150 with us to our new garden, which is still quite a big rose garden, but more manageable.
Yes, much more manageable, I think. I saw in an interview on YouTube that you did on old roses, and when asked, why did you grow old roses anyway, I was totally enchanted by your response, and I quote, you said, for romance, for history, and for the lusciousness of the plant. I would totally agree with all three reasons. You know, I love all my roses, and I have a few too, but there's just nothing quite like that first luscious bloom cycle of the old roses. Wouldn't you agree?
It's just magic, and they're all so different in their ways. All this hundreds of thousands of different types of roses, all with their own charm, with their own fragrance, with their own growth habits, with their own color, and their own story. Why would you grow anything else?
And it's the stories. You know, when visitors come to my garden, and I don't have nearly as many as you've mentioned, but when they come to my garden, especially in the spring when the old roses are blooming, I mean, they just go crazy. And if I have a story that I can share about them, well, you can tell that just makes the experience so much richer. And that's what you've done so beautifully in your book. But before we go on to your book, let's talk about some tips that you would have for growing old roses. Are they different than the modern roses, do you find?
Well, I think they are. I think they're more vigorous. I think they're healthier. And I think they have a completely different growth style and a completely different flowering habit. And they're a much easier plant than I think modern roses are because of their innate health in them. But also the fact that you don't need to prune them the way you prune modern roses. So you get left, once they've finished flowering, you get left with shrub. You know, a large shrub in your garden, fully leafed, and which would eventually, in many cases, follow on with hips. So in the winter, you just have, de-leaved shrub rather than the very heavily pruned modern roses. So in my view, they're much easier to grow. They're much more graceful in the garden. And also the way we grew them, you didn't need to spray them. So they're very much more healthy.
Oh, I think so too. How much fertilizer did you use on your roses? Did you use a lot of fertilizer?
Well, we would put blood and bone as a natural fertilizer because we were pretty organic where we grew them. We'd give the whole garden a dusting of blood and bone, and then at the beginning of spring, the end of autumn, we would give them Nitrofosca Blue, and then we would mulch heavily, and that would see them through the whole season.
Mm-hmm. I find I don't do a lot of...
Again, very simple regime.
Mm-hmm. Now, for our listeners who are just getting started with old garden roses, do you have a few that you would recommend for someone just getting started?
Well, yes, and I found that a really difficult question because people often ask, what's your favorite rose? And I would say, well, it depends on how the light is hitting a particular rose, whether I've got secateurs or a spade in my hand or a gin and tonic in my hand. So it's very hard to say there is one particular, but I do adore the damask family. I adore them because of their gentle strength. I adore the very gentle color and for the wonderful damask fragrance that they have. So if I was going to focus on any one particular family, it would be the damask family.
Now, Anne, I'm in particular are fond of rugosas after a glass of white wine.
Well,
you cannot go wrong with
or
without wine.
Yeah.
They are particularly tough, and they're repeat flowering, and they produce hips as you go along, and they've got that wonderful rugose leaf. And my husband adores them, and if he had room, he'd have every rugosa everywhere.
Wow. They're beautiful roses.
Yes, they are.
We have a question from our chat room tonight, live. The person's asking about old garden roses that, you know, once you plant them as the year, you know, year one, year two, year three develops, do they become more disease resistant? Do you feel like they build up a natural resistance to their environment?
I think they are. I think if you treat your roses the way you would treat a person, keep them healthy, feed them well, water them well, give them air to float around them, then their innate toughness just comes sailing through. You know, we lost very few roses because of diseases, because of things like rust or mildew or anything like that. So look after them and cherish them, and they will just reward you.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. Teresa?
Well, let's dive into this amazing book, Women in My Rose Garden. Rose friends, if you don't have this book, please check it out. I think you will want to add it to your list of must-haves for sure. So, Anne, tell us, what was your inspiration for writing the book?
Well, it was just, you know, I spoke earlier about the going around in the evening and with the glass of wine and talking to the roses, and my husband and I would say, well, who on earth was this Duchess, and what did she do to get a rose named after her? And we'd just have this kind of conversation. And then in the end, in the year of women's suffrage in New Zealand, the centenary of women's suffrage, he called my bluff and he said, time you got on with it. Sit down, do it. So I sat down and I did it.
Oh, my goodness. Now, how long did it take you to write the book?
Oh, it took forever. It took forever for a number of reasons. It was very hard at that time to get a publisher. There was a New Zealand publisher who was interested, but that publishing house decided that this was an international book and took it to the Frankfurt Book Fair, but couldn't get any international interest. And so in the end, it was all sent back to me, and all the stuff was on my kitchen table one day when we had an Englishman come and visit us, and he looked at it and said, what's all this about? So I told him the sorry tale of this years of hard work and nobody wanted it, and, you know, the story of many authors, I think. And he said, I have a friend, he said. So that friend happened to be the Colin Webb of Palazzo Editions in Bath in England, who took up the option to publish it.
Oh,
so
my
after
goodness.
A very
England
slow...
has been very good to you.
Pardon?
England has been very good to you.
yes, it has. And so he and I started working on it. Now, it's very difficult to work with a publisher, an editor who is, what, 24,000 miles away? And it would have been better, I think, in the long run if I'd just got on the plane and got over and talked to him about what he wanted, what was his vision, and how could I fit in to do this. Instead, we had this toing and froing for a long time. And then came the international financial crash, which delayed it further. And then out of the blue, he sent an email and said, I can see light on the horizon. Let's go. So he was very good in that he stuck with me. He stuck with this new author in New Zealand who had her own vision. And together we worked through it. And I'm really good that he stuck with me and I stuck with him.
Oh, it's just a beautiful, beautiful book. And I keep wondering as I read through this book, as you research these women, were there any big surprises along the way?
Well, it was surprising that there was... for a lot of the women, there was very little information. They were merely adjuncts to their husbands' lives, really. And so they did not have their own history. So I was very pleased, and which is why we focused on these wonderful women, because there was enough information of them to really have a good story. And yes, I did have surprises. Like, one of my favorites is Yolande d'Aragon, a beautiful, beautiful rose. I had no idea who she was until I found out that she was a female Machiavelli of her time. She was the woman behind Joan of Arc. She was a queen in her own right. And she was born in 1380 and lived till 1442. So she was a queen, a mother, the woman in charge of the Dauphine of France. And she just spoke to me, that woman, that I knew nothing about.
Well, I remember not too long ago on Facebook, you posted a gorgeous picture of that rose, Yolande d'Aragon. And I remember, if I remember correctly, you said something like, a terrific rose for a feisty woman. So
yes.
I think that's an apt description. I'm so glad you unearthed the information that is about these women to pay homage to them. Super.
Well, the getting of the information was really good because the internet is full of it, but the internet is not always true. And and I relied heavily on my local library and on old book stores. And what I could find on the internet, I could find the slightest of reference to one of these women. And I'd go to my librarian and say, can you find this? And librarians, I discovered, love a hunt. And they invariably would find documents and papers and books for me.
Well, I know we sometimes just hear legends, but you unearth the legends. I know in the case of Rosa Monday, you know, there's the legend,
yes,
and then there's the real story as you tell it. So why don't you tell us the story of Rosa Monday as you know it to be, not just the legend?
The legend, well, it's a lovely, lovely legend, but the legend, as all legends are, barely based in truth. And Rosamundi was a woman called Rosamond, and she was the mistress of one of the kings of England. And I think it was Henry II, I think.
Henry II.
And he was married to Eleanor, the very famous Eleanor of Aquitaine. And when Eleanor found out about this, the legend says that she is said to have murdered Rosamond. But actually, Rosamond spent the rest of her life after being rumbled by Eleanor of Aquitaine in a nunnery. She wasn't murdered by the Queen. The Queen was actually in custody at the time for acting against Henry. And so it was a wonderful story, but in fact, Rosamundi simply means Rose of the World. And it is one of those beautiful, vibrant Gallica roses, that one of the very original roses, you know, prehistory almost. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful purple, not purple, pink and striped rose, unlike modern striped roses. So Rosamond lived from 1140 to 1166, and she died in a nunnery just outside Oxford. Did she repent her affair? Who knows? But she died soon afterwards.
Well, that story is somewhat told in one of my favorite movies, The Lion in Winter, and Katharine Hepburn does a wonderful job of playing the queen. So that's something that
Eleanor,
I find very interesting. Yes, she did a wonderful job playing Eleanor. Of all the women in your book, you tell this beautiful story of Sombroy. Would you tell it for listeners?
Yeah, Sombroy is a rose that I would never be without. It's just the most luscious of roses, and it's a lot more modern than many of the other old roses that we had in her garden. But Mademoiselle de Sombroy is a heroine of the French Revolution. She lived in 1768 till 1823, and her father was in charge. He was an aristocrat, and he was in charge of the king's armory. So when he was arrested and taken to the guillotine, she went up to the head of the revolutionaries and pleaded for the wife, for the life of her father. You know, he is only an old man. He is my father. He is not really an aristocrat. He supports the revolution. And the head of the revolutionary said, well, prove it. Prove it by drinking this cup of fresh aristocratic blood. So she drank what is said to be a cup of aristocratic blood, and the revolutionaries released her father.
Mm.
So it's an incredible story of bravery and grit, true grit.
Oh, true grit. I read that in your book last winter. Your book was one of my winter reads. And so guess what was on my list this year? And I have added Sonvoy to my garden. And when she bloomed this year, I felt like you were there with me, and it was beautiful. She had three or four just stunning blooms. And I'm very glad for the recommendation, because it is a very beautiful story and a very beautiful rose. And many of our Rose Chat friends grow the beautiful and the oh-so-fragrant Gertrude Jekyll rose. Could you tell us about Gertrude and her rose?
Well, she was another feisty woman, wasn't she? She was she was a rich aristocrat, and she spent all her money on plants and homes, and she ended up dying alone and sad and broke and poor. But she's a very maligned woman. She was a plants woman. She funded plant exhibitions for those Victorian men. She wrote the first definitive book on roses, and she is worthy of the rose that David Austin grew and named for her. So she was a bit of a tyrant. She is said to have had over 100 gardeners. She is said to have who are we talking about? Gertrude Jekyll or
Gertrude Jekyll. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And she was a painter. And she eventually went blind, and she is responsible, in fact, for the modern mixed border. She was the one that took roses out of a rose garden, a rose bed, and started mixing them with perennials and annuals, and having that wonderful colour hue of the English mixed border that went from the cool blues and whites through to the oranges and reds at the other end of a long, long garden. She was an interesting single woman. She lived in 1843 to 1932, and she drew heavily on the links between planting, gardening, and painting.
Mm-hmm.
And once she was unable to paint terribly much, she used her ability as an artist in the garden. She had some seriously influential friends in the artistic movement, in the arts and crafts movement. And she was a pretty indomitable woman.
The fragrance of the Gertrude Jekyll rose is almost unparalleled. It is just out of this world. I love that rose.
Yes.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, and I believe there was some interest in the rose perfume industry in mass planting them to use in the oil industry. I don't know if that ever came to pass, but I think it was probably too expensive to plant fields of Gertrude Jekyll for distillation. We don't have serfs and slaves anymore to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and pick the plants.
Well, yeah. I'm up at 5 every morning, Anne. I guess I can put that on my list, can I?
Just how many Gertrudes do you want to plant, Chris?
Right.
Well, Anne, I spent many years working as a florist, and I enjoyed reading about Constance Spry. I love it that she's included in your book. So tell our listeners about her and the very special rose.
Well, she was a surprise, was Constance Spry, because nobody knew that she wasn't married to Mr. Spry. So she started her life in the health sciences, and eventually... when her marriage disintegrated in Ireland, she moved to England and took up with a Mr. Spry. She was a teacher. She was probably, I think, a bit of a scientist as well as being an artist and a florist, because she was the one who gave us those first luscious, I have to use that word again, because her mm-hmm. her gardening, her floral displays were just absolutely fantastic, and nobody had ever seen the likes of it before. So mm-hmm. she started off life as a teacher, and she was a born teacher, and she eventually moved into floristry and home crafts, and that's what she did, and that's why she's famous, justifiably.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned in your book that she helped common people, even though she designed for royalty, literally, she helped common people use what they had around them in arrangements, whether it was berries or vegetables or twigs or ferns or just whatever they had. So she encouraged everyone to have beautiful things around them. Mm-hmm.
There was nothing formal in any of her arrangements, and that was her true genius, I think. And it's a style that I like. I'm a kind of a plonker of plants and of ours rather than somebody who will artistically arrange them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can count me in the plonkers club.
You quote her as saying, "Do not make lovely flowers into statements of geometry. Let the flowers remind you of how they are when they're growing." I love that.
Yes.
That's what I like. That's what I like.
And that
well,
was Amy, the natural.
Yes.
That was the natural style that she wanted.
And tell us about the rose that bears her name.
Rose who?
The rose that's named for her, wasn't it David Austin's first?
Oh, the Constance Spry rose. Yes, that was one of David Austin's very first one. And it was bred from an old Alba rose, a greatly fragrant Alba rose called Belle Isis. And it's just simply a tall, splendid, vibrant, powerfully fragrant rose. I think it's a wonderful fragrance. It's the fragrance of myrrh.
Mm-hmm.
And Libby, who used to work for us, was horrified when I put this in the book. But Libby said it smelt like public lavatory cleaner, that kind of earthy fragrance. But I just love it. It's a very tall rose and a very generous flowering, but it is only a once flower, and people sometimes get a bit sniffy about roses being only once flowering, but they give all they've got in that 6 to 8 weeks that they flower.
I do.
I've never grown that one. Go ahead.
Well, you remember that bloom all year long, just for that 6 or 8 weeks when they're really putting out the blooms. That stays with you?
It absolutely stays with you.
Yeah.
It does. When it's time for my old roses to bloom, I simply can't even sleep at night. I mean, you know that one morning you're going to wake up and walk out to just a spectacular display. And every picture I've ever seen of the Constance Spry, I've never grown that one, but every picture I've ever seen is just a million blooms. And who couldn't love that, even if it only blooms once?
It's a full-blown, deeply cupped, satiny pink rose, and she's just delicious.
Mm-hmm. There's that word again. You're gonna say lunch and snacks. I just know it. Now, tell us a little bit about the photography in your book. This book is absolutely amazing. Even if it wasn't for the amazing stories in the book. Just the pictures alone, it's just every page, whether it's a page of just print, it's beautiful. The etchings are just wonderful.
Well, I don't know much about the photographer. He was found by Colin Webb, the publisher. All I know about him is that his name is Paul Staroster, and he makes his living in still life photography of plants. And I think he's got a very big library of plant photographs, including roses. And he just has an eye, doesn't he? He just manages to make those roses look as if they're almost artificial. They're so beautiful and so perfect.
They certainly are. Well, Anne, we're coming to the close of our time together, but is there any rose you need to tell us about that we haven't mentioned, a favorite or a great story that we're missing here?
Well, you did in one of our emails say that you wanted to know about Madame RD.
Oh, yes.
Which is that wonderful white rose.
Mm-hmm.
And
I have several
Madame
of
RD. Madame Ardi was the wife of a Jules Alexandre Ardi. He was one of France's great horticulturalists and rose breeders, and he himself bred about 215 varieties. He was born in 1787, and he fought for Napoleon, and he was eventually employed in the Luxembourg Gardens. And he became the chief gardener there. Now, Madame Hardy is his cousin, Marie-Thérèse Pizzaz, and they had one son. And apart from that, that is all I can find out about the beautiful, beautiful Madame Hardy.
Oh, it is
wow.
So pretty. That's the one with the green eye. Oh, it is just,
yep.
It is luscious. Let me just go ahead and say it. Completely luscious. That green eye, the white, oh my goodness, and it's so fragrant.
Now, before we finish, I've had a notification that a second printing of the book will be released in the US in February. February
wonderful.
Next year, and it is a smaller version. It's approximately an A5 page. It's exactly the same. The cover, though, is a wonderful padded cover, and it looks very, very sweet. So the book will be available in America next year.
That's awesome.
Tell us a little bit about what you're doing now. You said that you retired. You mentioned that early on, but it doesn't seem to me that you're very retired. So tell our audience some of the things that you're up to now.
Well, at the moment I've got three ideas for three books. I've nearly finished the male version of Women in My Rose Garden, and I've tentatively called it Stature in the Garden, in the Rose Garden, Emperors, Generals and Gentlemen. So it's the stories about men who have had roses named after them. But I am having trouble getting a publisher for this. So if there are any publishers out there who want to take a punt on me, it tells some really ripping yarns.
Yeah.
So that's the main has been my main work over the last few years. So another book I have an idea about to write with a friend. I don't know if in America, if you know the BBC program called A History of the World in 100 Objects. Well, I thought A History of the World in 100 Roses might be quite nice as well. So that's percolating in my mind. And a third book percolating is there is a lot of interest in David Austin roses, but there has also been a lot of written about David Austin roses. So I thought I'd do David Austin with a twist. And many of his first roses were named after characters in Geoffrey Chaucer's Canterbury Tales. So I would rewrite the Canterbury Tales with David Austin's roses.
I want to read that one. You've got to do that one.
I've got to do that one?
You've got to do that one. Mm-hmm. That'll be a book. We want to read that one. Well, Anne, it's just such a delight to have you. And we appreciate your taking time to share with us about your garden and about these wonderful women and what you're doing. It's just so inspiring. Well, thank you very much, and thank you for having me on.
I've never been on American radio before, so it's a real treat for me.
Well, it is definitely a treat for us to have you.
Well, friends, we've come to the end of another podcast, and I want to thank Anne again for being on the show tonight to talk about her book, Women in My Rose Garden. I want to direct you to her website. That's annechapman.net.nz. That'll take you to her beautiful website where it outlines all of the books that she's written and many other stories and articles that will tell you all about her adventures in New Zealand. Now, Anne, we're going to have you back to talk about the three books you mentioned and then also one that I'm particularly interested in about the missionaries' wives and roses. I just think that would be another fascinating conversation. We'd love to have you back to talk about that too.
Well, that would be good. And if you email me your address, I'll post you over a copy.
Wow. Well,
that would be wonderful. We will definitely do that.
Well, Anne, thanks again, and thanks to our listeners for listening to this broadcast of the Rose Chat podcast. And just a reminder to our listeners that you can hear this podcast not only at rosechatpodcast.com, but via iTunes and Stitcher radio apps on your mobile devices. You can listen to this podcast on the go anytime, absolutely free. So until next time, happy gardening from your friends at Rose Chat.
Thanks for listening to the Rose Chat Podcast with Chris Van Cleve and Teresa Byington. Hear previous podcasts via our website, rosechatradio.com, or listen to this podcast via iTunes and Stitcher apps. Be sure and give us a 5-star rating and share this show with your social networks. Your friends will thank you. Join us next time for another edition of The Rose Chat. Rose Chat is a production of the Rose Chat Media Group, Birmingham, Alabama.